Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Before we begin our show today, I want to send out special prayers to all of those who have lost loved ones to this pandemic, COVID-19. Our prayers go out to you and your families, as well as all of the first responders, hospital workers, everybody that's putting their lives on the day, every day, on the line every day, to try to protect us and provide us with a safe environment and community. Today, our show is called Politics versus Policy in Today's Political Climate. And I'm honored to have in the studio today Professor Nicholas Giordano, who is the Suffolk County Political Science Professor. And we're going to talk about basically how we've moved away, or the history of politics versus policy. Where did it really begin, and how did we get to where we are today? So I'd like to introduce into the studio Professor Nicholas Giordano. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Chauncey. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. For my audience, politics versus policy today seems to be dominating the political landscape. We've even known it and saw it and recently in the Amy Comey Barrett hearing, the posturing from the left and the Democratic side in the fear that they tried to stoke in the people of America to try to sway the Senate to vote against her. What do you think about politics versus policy? Where did it start to begin and shift in our country where that became the dominant part of the political landscape versus policy? And how has it affected our country in a negative way?
Well, I mean, I think politics has always played a role. So when we talk about politics, it's basically political parties trying to gain an edge over each other. They're trying to do what's in the best interest of their party as opposed to a country, where policy is where you're trying to do what's in the best interest of the country as opposed to political parties. So politics always played a role. However, the political parties back in the past used to be able to come together during key moments and put politics aside in order to deal with policy. However, I look at it starting in the late 1990s and early 2000s, where we saw this turn for the worse, where politics was put before policy in almost every circumstance. We had the few moments where we came together to put politics aside, the 9/11, the mortgage meltdown crisis of 2008. However, it's been increasing every year since 2000, and it's gotten to the point now where we just saw a great example Monday with Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, with the coronavirus stimulus package. And she's saying she's basically trying to put off a deal till after the election. And that's politics right there. The reason that she doesn't want a deal now is because it will benefit President Trump if a deal gets cut before the election. So she's put politics in the way of that because she doesn't want President Trump to have the victory, even though it means that the American people will benefit as well if a package is passed today.
That's a very, very valid point. You know, and I guess the mainstream media plays a large part in the dissemination of this disinformation that dominates the landscape, that makes almost politics shifting almost even towards identity politics. I don't know. I seem that there might be a relationship between the two.
Well, there certainly is. So when we look at identity politics, basically you're just trying to play off people's racial or ethnic identities in order to gain votes to benefit a political party. And the left and Democrats have really played this game hard over the course of the last decade. So they'll go to a black audience thinking that black people are just a monolithic block and tell them what they want to hear. Then you go to a Hispanic audience, you tell them what they want to hear, and a woman audience, you tell them what they want to hear. And basically, you just accuse the other side of wanting to hurt those communities. And you do that so that those communities, the black community, Hispanic community, or women, start to not trust. They start to look at the other side with suspicion. It's probably one of the worst aspects of politics that you can think of because it is so divisive. And given our history on race issues, it actually makes it even worse. It's like pouring salt on a wound that's already there. But that's the divide and conquer strategy, you know, and that's what the left has been trying to do. See, the left realizes the left is all about socialism in this day and age, pushing towards communism, Marxism. But the left realized that the whole essence of communism is really for the workers to rise up and to revolt against the handful of people that control things. Well, that argument never worked in the United States because we have the largest middle class, the most well-off middle class in the world, and because in the United States we recognize fairness, that, you know, everyone is not equal, that some of us work harder than others. And people, you know, we believe in merit. What the left has realized is the workers weren't revolting, and so let's try and create this racial, ethnic, class warfare to exist. And that's what they've been able to, I don't want to say successfully do, we'll see in the election, but they certainly tried hard this year. There's no doubt about that.
You've identified that this pattern has began in the late 1990s, early 2000s.
Yes.
What has been the impact that if we keep going down this path, how is it going to impact the country? Or how has it negatively, you cited some things, you know, how will it, I guess, in the long run, negatively impact the country?
Sure. So, first of all, the main driver behind all this is certainly the advancing technologies of the internet and social media. And as those things have become more mainstream, we've seen politics play much more of a role. And the end result is not pretty. The United States will not survive. We will become a country like Afghanistan, where the factions, the tribes that we belong to, become more important than the country itself. So even though we all got to live in this country, we all have to coexist together, and we're all in this together, if you look at a country like Afghanistan, the Afghani people don't look at a unified country of Afghanistan. Their loyalty is to their tribe. And whatever tribe dominates, that's the tribe that reaps all the rewards. And the way they dominate is through brute force. Afghanistan's history has not changed in 2,500 years, and it's not going to change anytime soon because of the tribal nature of Afghanistan. Now, if you look at the United States, we are different in the sense that we all come from different backgrounds. We all have different ethnicities, different traditions. But we're all supposed to agree on the tenets of the American creed that was put forth in the Declaration of Independence. But now that's becoming called into question by the Democrats, who have basically stated that America is a horrible country. America was founded on racism and slavery, and our only existence is because of racism and slavery. And so how can you believe in the tenets of the American creed if you know how horrible America is? That's what the left has been putting out there, and that's why it's dangerous. And Madison warned us in Federalist 10 that as a republic, the founders could only put in so many safeguards. Okay, so in Federalist 10, Madison lays out the safeguards that they put into play. But he said, we can't solve the problem of factions, because the only remedy to factions is to either have a totalitarian state where no political parties or dissent of opinion can exist, or you have to give everyone the same opinion, which, because of human nature, that's just illogical and it's impossible. So Madison, 230-somewhat years ago, warned us that if we factionalize as a country, ultimately that will be the death of the country. And if you look at any great civilization out there, any great empire that ever existed, they always died from within before they were defeated from abroad.
That is very, very interesting perspective. that you dissected for us, Professor. What can we do? What could we do to push back as regular people against this?
Well, one thing would be to reject the left's message, to reject that the message of division, the message of fear, the message of hate, reject it outright. But what people need to start doing is how we used to act. So it used to be that we kind of kept our politics to ourselves. Now, we're always engaged in some sort of way with politics, but we kind of kept our political ideologies to ourselves. And we didn't let our political ideologies drive everything in life that we do. We didn't let our political ideologies define who we are as a people. As far as people go, they need to reject any politician that peddles in this division. But also, we need to recognize that we can't infuse politics into every little thing we do. We can't let our political identity, our political ideologies, define who we are. Politics is one aspect of our lives, and it's not even the most important aspect. I mean, the most important aspects of life are God and family, taking care, economics. Those are the most important aspects of life, and we can't let our ideology define who we are as a people.
The mainstream media, and I know you alluded to earlier that this has been on the rise because of technology. The mainstream media, have they been trying to push this message as well, where it's almost an accelerant to the fire, if you will, to what could potentially happen within our country?
Well, whenever you have a problem, the media, you know, likes to douse it in gasoline and just make it a million times worse. And there are two reasons for that. So the first reason that the media just contributes to this problem and actually exacerbates it, the first reason is because it's creating. The more division there is, the more opinion shows you can have, the better the ratings, the more advertising revenue you bring in. Like, it's not really a news story if, you know, you have two groups of protesters that are protesting different sides and they're all sitting there having a barbecue getting along together. And so the media has to foster, in a sense, that division. And they have to antagonize to try and create some conflict. So that's one area. It's for advertising revenue and to bring in more money. But the other avenue is that there's so many in the media that now have this groupthink mentality. It used to be that journalists came from all walks of life. You know, some of them never went to college. Some of them may have dropped out of high school. Some of them may have been in a business beforehand, before they went into journalism. Today, if you look at journalists, most of them are going to the same schools, going to the same professors, associating with the same type of people, with the socioeconomic backgrounds in their classrooms, that they only see what's in their own little bubble. And we know the New Yorks, the Los Angeleses in California, the Washington, D.C.s, that's all they know. And so they don't understand that there's this whole country that they may have a different opinion. They don't accept that. They actually kind of reject that. And they reject people that don't think like them as Neanderthals. And basically, it's that groupthink. We're gonna look at everything through the prism, and we're going to infuse our stereotypes into how we report everything. That's exactly what they do. The media has been absolutely horrendous and has exacerbated this problem to a point where it's actually dangerous.
For those that are tuning in, this is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We're honored to have in the studio today Suffolk County political science professor, Mr. Nicholas Giordano, talking about politics versus policy in America today. You talked earlier about Federalist 10 in Madison, and it made me realize that most kids today don't even know what federalism is, doesn't know what the Federalist Papers are. And as we talk about this rise of the less of the Marxism, the socialism, the communism, I realize that maybe our educational system is failing our children. Because if they don't get this indoctrination or expose themselves to this type of history on how it was founded, then their ideas are conflated, and it's apparent by the actions of the left.
Absolutely, and our education system has failed. I've said it time and time again. I'm a big speaker on this. The American education system has collapsed, especially when it comes to things like government, civics, and politics, and history. The students of today know absolutely nothing about our country. They don't know the founding of the country. Most of them, I teach college level. Most of them, when they get into my class, they haven't read the Declaration of Independence. They haven't read the United States Constitution. And if they actually read the Declaration of Independence, it was in seventh or eighth grade, where by the time they get to me, the reality is that these documents should be infused in their brains. They should know all these documents. And it's really disheartening. When you look at the Federalist Papers, most of them are never introduced to it until they get to my class. And the Federalist Papers have some profound arguments that are worthy of a read if you want to understand our government. But most important, if you lack an understanding of our government, why it was set up, what's the roles and responsibilities of our institutions, well, then you get what you see today. And it's a bunch of people that are constantly looking to the federal government to solve their problems. They don't understand that we have a federal government that's responsible for certain things, and state and local governments that are responsible for other things. And the coronavirus is actually the perfect example. During the coronavirus, there's a lot of people that are trying to blame federal response. But the federal government did what they're tasked to do. The federal government provides resources, and they help coordinate between the states. The states are the ones that actually lead response when it comes to emergencies and pandemics. And what is truly amazing is that we're constantly hearing this president get accused of being a dictator. A dictator would be the one that mandates nationwide lockdowns, that mandates every single person wears a mask. That's the authoritarian dictator. And you have a president here that's saying, no, state and local governments are going to be responsible to make their decisions for what's in the best interest of their states. And if the people of those states don't like it, well, then they have to push back against their state and local governments. That is the essence of federalism, where we have this separation. Yet it appears today that almost everyone, anytime there's a problem within the community, whether it's crime, whether it's education or healthcare or infrastructure, they turn to the federal government. They want the federal government to solve the problem. Our founders didn't want it that way because they understood that an all-powerful federal government, an all-powerful central government, could quickly turn tyrannical. And so they believed that power should be limited on the federal level, put power in the states, because liberty is best protected in the states as opposed to the feds. So it's interesting to see how the changes have morphed. You know, California, if they want to do a universal health care system, well, let them do it. Why ruin it for the other 49 states? Let them do it. If it works in California, then other states will adopt it. That's the beauty of federalism, that states are laboratories. They could all have their own different policies and see what works and doesn't. But today we want uniformity across the United States, and that's just a recipe for a disaster.
So in other words, the left is trying to expand government to control our lives versus limited government, where we could maintain our liberties and freedoms.
Absolutely. And you see it in the blue states, where the governors are ruling by decrees. They don't have the power through their state legislatures. It's not like the legislative branch is making laws in regards to response and masks and lockdowns or anything like that. These governors have clearly shown that they have no regard for the Constitution whatsoever. And if you look at a state like New Jersey, I mean, the governor of New Jersey stated that when it came to lockdowns and mask mandates, that the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, didn't even come into consideration. In fact, his exact quote was, "It's above my pay grade," which is absolutely disgusting. for an elected official to say, because as a governor of the state, you have to abide by the United States Constitution and the New Jersey State Constitution. You're taking an oath of office to uphold both those constitutions. To say that it's above your pay grade, well, then you shouldn't be the governor of a state.
That is absolutely correct. I mean, you know, you have to raise your hand even for appointed or elected positions on local levels to the Constitution of the United States of America and the state of New Jersey, and it's just unconscionable that I heard that in his, I believe he said that on the Tucker Carlson show. Was very, 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 very disheartening.
Now, to me, it was insanity. I've never heard that come out of a politician's mouth. And it's, you know, I guess when you move 233 years out from a document, I guess people tend to forget that document exists. And I guess people don't hold it in such a high regard. However, I will say that we need to rediscover America. We need to recognize that this document is one of the most profound documents in human history. That, as Ronald Reagan said, that this document is the one document in the world where we tell the government what it could do, not what the government dictates what we could do. And unfortunately, what people don't recognize is that this election year, the Constitution is on the ballot. Make no mistake about it. If the Democrats win, if Joe Biden wins, the odds are he's going to win the Senate as well. The Democrats will retake the Senate, and we will have a unified government controlled by Democrats. And we've seen what the radical policies they introduced, not 10, 15 years ago, what they did in the last 2 years. We've seen what they want to do. Now, they're already threatening to pack the court and get rid of the filibuster. If they do that, it's game over. And that's going to be the first step, because if you pack the court and get rid of the filibuster, then any crazy radical proposal could just pass by a majority vote in the United States Senate, and who are you going to complain to? So if they pass an unconstitutional gun mandate, we're going to have to abide by that, and we could challenge it in the Supreme Court, but if the Supreme Court packed, it doesn't matter at that point. The Supreme Court will validate it. And they will say it's constitutional. And so you could see the attack on the Second Amendment. You could see the attack on the First Amendment with the implementation of speech codes and censorship and the introduction of things like H.R. 1, a bill that they first introduced in 2018. And this is what I'm concerned about, that we're going to see a transformation in the roles and responsibilities of government if we have a unified government controlled by Democrats. Now, there are some that will say, well, that's not fair. You have moderate and liberal Democrats that won't allow that to happen. And my answer to that, my response is, well, how do you know, number one, that they're not going to go along with it? You don't. So are you willing to take that gamble? But more importantly, has the Blue Dog and the moderate Democrats pushed back against the far-left radicals at all in the last 3 years? And the answer is no. They've been largely silent. So do I really expect them to push back when the far left has all the power? And the answer is no, obviously they're not going to push back. So we better think long and hard when we're going to cast our votes this election year.
Professor, thank you so much for coming on the show today and giving us some insight in the impact of politics versus policy in America today. We hope that you will come back on so we can maybe broaden the discussion on some other issues that are affecting our country. But the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, those are documents that are sacred. We need to expose them more to our children on all the educational levels to help understand if we want to keep this as a republic and protect our private liberties and rights. That's something that we must do in order to save our nation. And I agree with you that this is the most important election in the history of our nation. And it's about the Constitution. And it's about we the people versus the left, as you said, trying to create a unified government, which we all know that when you have totalitarianism at one point, like you said, it's going to start deteriorating from within. And then it's ball game is all over. You are also the host of Passport. Would you please share with our audience if they want to get in contact with you, check out your show? Could you please share with my audience that information?
Sure. I have a podcast called The PAS Report. You go to PASReport.com. You can also find it on iTunes, Google Podcasts, any major podcast network. You'll find it. Just type in Nicholas Giordano or The PAS Report. You could also follow me on Twitter. I'm being censored right now, so you have to kind of dig to find my profile, but it's at PAS Report, or just type in Professor Nicholas Giordano and I'll pop up. So I'm all over the place.
Thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for standing up for America, Professor. And also thank you for still trying to raise the level of consciousness of our young people by you being a college professor. And it's sad that the kids are entering into the level of college, which they have very limited knowledge of, no knowledge of American history. And it's very important work that you do, and thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed the discussion.
Thank you very much. Take care, Professor. You were listening to U.S. National Politics, and we were honored and proud to have on the show Suffolk County Political Science Professor Nicholas Giordano talking about politics versus policy in America today and its impact over the last decade on how it has had an effect on our government. You can follow me on Twitter at New York Talk Radio Host. You can follow me on Facebook at Right Talk Radio Host. I'm also on Parler at Right Talk Radio Host. And you can follow the show, U.S. National Politics, on Facebook, also U.S. National Politics at Blog Talk Radio and on Twitter. Please all have a safe, blessed, and wonderful evening. The most important decision, or one of the most important decisions that we will make in our lifetime, is voting. Your vote does count. Please vote. This is the most important election in the history of our country, where the Constitution's at stake and the freedoms and liberties and rights of all Americans are in jeopardy. So please, make a wise an informed choice. Have a good night, and God bless you all.